Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 220 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to host Jonathan Weiss, Chief Revenue Officer at Eigen Innovations, providing industrial machine vision without limits. Eigen Innovations is one of Momenta's early venture investments. Jonathan is a trusted advisor to global industrial clients and early stage software companies with a proven track record of success in developing and implementing innovative business and sales strategies. He specializes in partnering with leading manufacturers to drive cost reduction, improve operational efficiencies, and enhance supply chain resilience through the implementation of advanced technologies such as IoT, IIoT, AI, and ML. Jonathan has a strong track record of success, having spent the past decade working with some of the world's most prominent companies, including Amazon, Procter & Gamble, General Electric, Pfizer, PepsiCo, Intel, Koch Industries, and Foxconn, to name a few. He's focused primarily on executing digital transformations in machine and manufacturing facilities, supply chain initiatives, and enterprise applications. Jonathan, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast.
Thanks for having me, Ken. Great to be here.
As well. We were talking just a few minutes before, and Eigen was, I believe, our second or third investment way back. And I remember seeing Scott, your founder, at an early conference in, I believe it was one of the first IoT conferences in Palo Alto at the time. I believe it was Informa, if I remember right. And just being so fascinated with his story that we felt we had to invest early on. So I know you represent probably the second or maybe even third generation of leadership there, but really excited you joined the company and quite excited to have you on this podcast. So, we call this the Digital Thread podcast. And what we really think about is one's personal digital thread. How did you get to where you're at now? So what would you consider to be your digital thread?
It's a good question. I think the digital thread means a lot of things to different people. I guess for me and my personal journey, it's really been this conscious effort of creating this thread of mine that's all about solving problems and complex ones. And so I've had quite the evolution throughout my career, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that, Ken, but it translates really well to Eigen. And it's funny that you phrased it that way, where you kind of saw our founder, Scott, speaking, and you felt compelled to get a seat at the table. And it's funny you phrase it that way, because I had the same experience when I first came across Eigen. It was through a joint effort I was working on with Intel. And Eigen was brought to the table as a partner. And by the end of the very first presentation I saw, I knew I had to get involved with these folks somehow, some way. And fast forward about, a year and a half, almost 2 years, and that turned into to this full-time role here. So I guess we were both impressed with what we saw, huh?
Clearly. And it's interesting to see him in action and also to understand the impact of vision on the manufacturing space. And you guys were very early user of pattern-based, really, vision recognition systems. And so we'll get into that in a few minutes, but very excited to have you. So I was intrigued by your early experience. So a mix of first responder, so thank you so much for your service, and web development. An interesting mix, shall we say.
Sure.
Ultimately, that led you to GE Digital in 2015. So what ultimately attracted you to industrial automation in general and GE in particular?
So I grew up with a very, engineering-focused mindset. So I really, as a kid, I enjoyed watching How It's Made and all of those kinds of shows on, Discovery Channel and History Channel. And grew up in a household with a pretty large focus on education. So, going to museums and things like that. So I was always intrigued by understanding how things worked. At an early age, for example, I used to enjoy building computers and stuff like that. And so that just kind of naturally evolved and ultimately translated into an interest in the industrial space. And, what better place to learn about manufacturing than a company like General Electric, especially when I joined back in 2015. It's been almost 10 years ago. But it was really at a time that was very exciting for General Electric. They were just starting to think about forming this new digital entity, which of course ultimately became called GE Digital, and they, you know, gave birth to the whole Predix platform. And so I joined at a really exciting time. I got to be a part of all of that and see it all, you know, come to life. And so that just really propelled my interest and also my career in the industrial software space.
You were actually quite lucky. I mean, GE Digital particularly is one of those companies I would consider to be really kind of one of the launching points, if you will, of the industrial IoT. I was relaying earlier that I was a part of Wonderware back in the 1990s, and you could say akin to Wonderware did for HMIs, I think GE Digital did for overall industrial IoT. And I still love the original campaign that was the power of 1 and 2%. It really describes the efficiency and the benefits that come from applying digital technologies to typical hardcore industries. And so great place to certainly call your alma mater. I know you went on to join Software AG, ultimately serving as vice president for emerging technologies in 2019. Can you tell us a little bit about your role at Software AG and some of your notable wins during that time?
Yeah, sure. I guess I'll explain kind of how I got there, because early in my career, I spent, let's say, the first 10 years or so of my career as kind of hands on the keyboard, software engineer, and then solution architect. So very, very technical. GE was kind of my foray into more management, you know, people leadership, and focusing a bit more strategic in nature. So during my time at GE, I was managing one of the global professional services teams, implementing smart factory solutions. And so that translated really well to what Software AG was looking for, which was a new leader to come and ultimately run the pre-sales group for the IoT business in North and South America. Pre-sales is essentially the technical arm to the sales group. So think about the engineers, software engineers, solution architects that support early stage pursuits and sales cycles. That's the group that I was tasked with running. And that quickly evolved into a much larger role at Software AG through, I guess, like most things in my career, timing and luck. It just kind of worked out that they needed somebody to fill a larger role. And I had kind of proven myself fairly early on in my career at Software AG. So they were kind enough to consider me for that role. And ultimately, I ended up taking over sales and pre-sales. And so I had really full responsibility for everything on the business side of the house for this IoT and analytics P&L. And so some of the key wins and some of the things that we focused on there, we spent a lot of time delivering IoT solutions and platforms in the medical device world as well as in the industrial space. So we were providing platforms that did things like remote asset management, remote and connected field services applications for industrial air compressor companies, industrial rental equipment companies. And then in the medical device world, probably some of the largest medical device manufacturers on the planet, we were able to strike deals with them and have some really, really impactful, successful IoT launches around things like pacemaker configuration devices and stations, smart nurse call stations within hospitals, smart hospital beds, things like that. So it was quite a range of applications that we delivered.
In what I guess I could describe an archetypical pattern for many industrial leaders, you went from GE to a large technology provider, in the case of Software AG, I'll call it an IT traditionally provider, and then went on to work at one of the quote hyperscalers. In your case, it was AWS as the global go-to-market leader industrial manufacturing for AWS strategic industries. What were some of the key lessons you learned during that time relative to operating at the intersection of IT and OT?
So personally, it was an important transition for me. What I realized during my time at Software AG was that as much as I love technology and IoT was a whole lot of fun, I really missed being able to focus just exclusively on solving problems for manufacturers. And so it was an interesting hiatus going from GE to more of kind of a general broad brush approach to solutions delivery or problem solving, if you will, for a variety of industries. But the role at Amazon at AWS was really appealing to me because it gave me a forum to go back and focus exclusively on industrial manufacturers. And so that's why I ultimately left Software AG. Honestly, great company, great people, but I was kind of fulfilling a personal passion to go back into manufacturing full time. And so this AWS role provided that for me. Some of the lessons I learned early on I was reminded just how foundational problems in the world of IoT and data collection are still a problem for some of the world's largest industrial manufacturers, meaning doing what we would consider in technology to be kind of a quote unquote basic task, something like just collecting data from a machine or a piece of equipment. Still today, that remains a really large challenge for folks in the industrial space for a variety of reasons. Equipment is very difficult technically to connect to due to proprietary protocols. The different types of data coming off the machines and even off of processes are very vast and they vary. All different form factors, nothing is normalized, nothing is standardized, and managing it all at scale across lines, across factories, it's incredibly cumbersome for these manufacturers. So it was a good reminder that before we start talking about the kind of quote unquote sexy stuff in technology today, which is, you know, artificial intelligence and machine learning and generative AI and all these kinds of things, manufacturers still need help just getting the foundation developed. And so that was something I was kind of reminded of very early on.
Certainly apropos, and it's interesting, we see that the interest in AI and particularly in generative AI tools like ChatGPT have created a groundswell of activity just over the last 9 months for data collection, contextualization systems, particularly for industrial. So you'll see we made investments in, we are already in Hibyte, but also Aperio around the same lines. And so I think there's a lot of people realizing that I would love to have those type of, I'll call it user experiences, ChatGPT, like for my factory process, but the data I have, the control systems I have are just not up to par to be able to be easily mapped to those. And so, you know, you see a lot of companies talking about things like co-pilots as an example and such. So an interesting catch-up pattern, if you will, almost whiplash-like.
That's right.
Before we jump into Eigen, I wanted to ask, I know most of the hyperscalers we've been watching, so, you know, Microsoft, AWS, and Google have really since retreated from their focus on industrial automation with, you know, some pretty well documented, if you will, layoffs earlier this year. I'm just curious, why do you think that is?
Holy smokes, that's a pretty loaded question, Ken. Each of those companies have approached that a bit differently. AWS, at least on the Amazon front, really didn't see the same pullback that somebody like Microsoft, for example, did. Microsoft, you know, went through a kind of a round of layoffs where they let go of just about all of the people that did what I did at Amazon. So you're kind of industry experts or subject matter experts. Amazon didn't really do the same thing. In fact, AWS has some very strategic focus happening at the moment in the industrial sector. So I do think that they remain pretty maniacal on growing that business. I don't think there's a pullback there. I do think there are organizations that get into the industrial space, just generally speaking, that underestimate just how complex and complicated problems actually are to solve. It's very similar to regulated industries where, you know, you have a lot of sensitivity around the types of data that is allowed to be extracted from machines or processes, a lot of proprietary data sets that manufacturers are not comfortable sharing on cloud platforms to privacy concerns, security concerns. And by the way, Ken, we can debate the legitimacy of those concerns. That's probably a topic for another day, but these are some of the things that are top of mind for manufacturers. And so I think companies come in with an expectation that it's going to be quite easy to tackle some of these challenges, but in reality, it's not. It's complex stuff. And also, it requires much more than just technological expertise. It really, really requires domain expertise, much like trying to sell technology or provide technology for any kind of very specialized niche application. Going into a process manufacturer versus a discrete manufacturer, pharma versus CPG or food and bev, metals, so on and so forth, you have to talk to these folks differently and you have to understand their needs quite clearly. And the needs really are different from manufacturing function to function, if that makes sense. So without that domain expertise, which quite frankly, a lot of those companies didn't have, it's very, very, very difficult to actually get buy-in from the executives at those industrial companies. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, it does actually. And I think you've hit on some great points in there. Traditionally, when one thinks about the quote unquote IT-OT divide from a technology perspective, you should be able to bridge it with technologies, right? There's plenty of good, solid IT technologies that will do what OT needs them to do. But what they underestimate, and you hit on it with the word sensitivity and domain expertise, is the conservatism of the culture there, right? Jokingly, nobody ever got fired for putting Siemens or Rockwell PLC in their plant, right? It's just how things are have always been done. And especially, as you say, in highly regulated industries, you know, where the cost of maybe an hour of downtime outweighs any savings you could potentially get from, quote, unquote, moving from proprietary hardware and software systems to more open ones. And so it's that sensitivity, the culture, if you will, that really is the part that I see an awful lot of people underestimate. Thus, I appreciate people who early on spent their time on factory floors, because they also appreciate, you know, when the alarm goes off to say that the process has stopped, you know, the fear factor that goes in with that. So
absolutely.
All of this, of course, is trying to paint really a broad picture of the experience that you're bringing into Eigen. I was so excited a couple months ago when I saw that you were named Chief Revenue Officer there. As mentioned, you were an early investor in the company. So tell us a little bit about the company and what attracted you to it, beyond, of course, as you said, seeing Scott in action.
Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit about Eigen, I guess, historically, just for some context. So Eigen really was born out of academia. And you see that today just based on the sheer talent that is remains in-house. We have quite a few PhDs on staff. Folks are incredibly smart. And that's one thing that intrigued me about the company very early on. But like I mentioned, Eigen started out of academia. So it was a research project in University of New Brunswick that ultimately became its own entity or its own company. And that was 10 or 11 years ago now. So the company's been going at this for over a decade. And there's been just an incredible amount of innovation that's taken place over the last 10 years, some really phenomenal proprietary technologies and patented technology that the company has created. And quite a bit of that was what intrigued me, just how much secret sauce, for lack of a better term, existed here, and the power that it delivers for Eigen's customers. So the ability to do incredibly fast image recognition and quality inspection within factories, and the scale at which we do it, you know, finding out things like some companies are using Eigen technologies to inspect quite literally millions upon millions of parts every year in their facilities. Some of the highest volume folks using our stuff are doing to the tune of 30, 40,000 parts a week that get inspected. So you start thinking about the scale of this solution and what I can deliver. That was incredibly compelling to me because in my experience, getting started in this space, really doing anything in industrial IoT, getting started is not typically the problem. Where you run into issues is breaking out of your pilots or proof of concepts and actually implementing technology at scale. That's where a lot of problems reside. And so seeing how Eigen was able to mitigate that, that was quite compelling to me.
You describe Eigen innovation as industrial machine vision without limits, a phrase that I absolutely love. What does that really mean in practice?
It quite literally means what it sounds like. We've created a tool set that empowers manufacturers and system integrators and vision teams, anybody who cares about leveraging machine vision. We empower them to do just about anything that they can think of. And we've built this tool specifically to be hardware agnostic. So you can leverage just about any camera or edge hardware that you'd like. And you can address just about any use case with the tool. So we have the exact same software tool running to do things like inline inspection for injection molding processes. And then you'll find the exact same tool looking at, for example, high gloss Class A style automotive surfaces for bumpers and things like that, or even inspecting metal welding processes using thermal cameras. So it's quite versatile. Hopefully that makes sense.
It does. And I remember the roots of the company were very much in terms of infrared thermal cameras. I remember one of the first use cases I saw was really a quality control one, testing the rear window defoggers or defrosters of automobiles coming off assembly line. So basically, is it heating the windshield and across as you would expect it to do? And I remember some really interesting ones with large paper manufacturers as well, looking for early tears in manufacture of paper mills. So very interesting stuff, but I'm curious, so what have been some of your more notable use cases and wins?
The paper one's actually a great example because it's quite quantifiable in nature. And my gosh, you've got a great memory, Ken, because this was definitely from a little while ago. But they still use our solution today in production, of course. And that's a great example because it speaks to a few things. It speaks to the value that technology like this brings to manufacturers, but it also speaks to the speed at which we're able to do what we do. This company happens to save about $1 million a year, actually a little bit more than $1 million a year due to unplanned outages that they're now able to mitigate, as well as equipment failure. And the reason why they're able to save that money is because they used to run anywhere from, say, 7 to 10 plus outages per year per line related to excessive buildup of coating on that paper. It's a very high grade specialty paper that they use. And what happens in the process, it's a continuous process. So a very, very large spool of paper. It's constantly going down a line, if you can picture that. And as it goes down, it gets this specialty high gloss coating applied to it. But what happens is there's a failure mode that can occur where that coating is not applied evenly, and it's at the, you know, millimeter, submillimeter level. But if it's not applied evenly and there's a buildup that occurs on the equipment itself, it only takes about 8 seconds, in some instances 10 seconds, but it's quite quick. That will actually damage the equipment and cause about $100,000 worth of damage every single time. And you only have about 8 to 10 seconds to catch it. So when you think about the speed at which this has to happen and why technology like this is important, well, for one, that coating, it's impossible for the human eye to see that kind of uneven buildup. So that's why we leverage technology like ours, especially in this case, we use thermal cameras to give us the appropriate view that we need. But yeah, tremendous cost savings. The defogger one's a good example too, by the way. Using camera systems, we were able to completely augment the manual process of applying essentially a heat-sensitive paper that they would put over those rear windshields. Traditionally, you apply the paper, you put an electrical current to the window, and then you see those defogger strips turn on. And then you look for demarcation on that paper to understand if you've got a good strips or bad strips. Well, we removed all that by the use of, you know, one thermal camera. And now that process takes seconds versus minutes. So we've got lots of great use cases and applications out in the world today like this.
You mentioned earlier the, I'd say, quintessential challenge with a lot of solutions in the OT space, and that is how to go from proof concept to pilot to at scale. And you guys clearly have cracked that nut. And so I'm kind of curious, how do you know when, I guess, first an organization is ready to adopt your solution? And what best practices have you seen in them realizing that potential value?
I think the answer I'm going to give you applies to probably quite a bit more than just what we do. It's a bit more of a digital transformation answer, but it's very relevant to us. But really, it all starts with a clear understanding of the need that an organization has and the quantifiable impact of resolving that need. So some folks might call that value engineering. It has many different names, but it's really fundamentally all about understanding the opportunity cost. And if we don't solve this problem, what does it actually cost your business? And if we do solve this problem, what's the benefit for your business? Having that quantifiable material impact value proposition, that's incredibly important. Quite frankly, without having that, what happens is you get stuck in this rut of doing POCs and pilots on what's likely going to be an unfunded initiative that does not have the right level of executive sponsorship because there's no business case or justification around the value of the investment. So it all starts with that. It starts with a clear understanding of the need and a clear understanding of the value of addressing that need. If you can do that right, I would venture to say just about any project will be successful from an adoption perspective to get to scale. In our world, the key difference for machine learning when it comes to vision systems and cameras, we've really cracked the nut on empowering our customers to build a machine learning model one time and then deploy it just about anywhere that they want to do similar inspection methods. So if a customer makes a widget, they train a machine learning model to inspect that widget, and then they want to do the exact same inspection on the same widget on a different line or in a different facility, we make it just a super simple process to point and click to deploy those models over and over again, which traditionally that's a very, very large barrier to scaling these vision systems.
I think it captures well, in fact, kind of closes the loop that started at GE Digital for you, and that was the focus on outcomes. That was probably one of the first times I heard that term used to describe the why of much of digital transformation. And I think you've done a good job of weaving that all the way into what you're doing now. So in closing, I always like to ask, you know, where do you find your personal inspiration?
In a variety of places. I'm still a nerd at heart, so I still love reading engineering magazines and different vision publications now. That's a little bit more relevant to my role today, but I still love reading stuff on LinkedIn. I follow a lot of the big guys like Rick Bellotta and, you know, all of these people who are constantly publishing stuff, as well as some of the analyst firms. But really, I'm pretty big on reading just about everything I can. And to be honest with you, I like challenging the norm and formulating my own opinion. So I like to go to a couple of different sources, oftentimes conflicting sources. So I like reading the comments on LinkedIn. So it's always fun, for example, when somebody like, you know, Walker Reynolds publishes something and you start reading people that challenge him. And so there's a lot of interesting insights floating around. And I guess like most things in life, the truth is somewhere in the middle, right? So yep. That's kind of how I look at it. And then outside of work, I'm kind of a creative guy. So I really love music. I love playing drums, playing guitar in my spare time. And that kind of unlocks some creative juices for me as I think about the problems I need to solve for my customers. Sometimes I just need to disconnect and come back later. That helps me as well, personally.
Oh, that's nice. You know, it's funny, talk about extremes, Walker Reynolds and Rick Bellotta. And I'll leave it at that. Those are the most entertaining, as you say, comment streams coming out of some of the stuff on LinkedIn.
There's no shortage of entertainment, that's for sure.
Oh, no. Clearly not in this space. But, you know, given how conservative OT can be at times, it's probably a welcome respite from the norm of productivity, people, and planet that makes up so much of OT. So. Well, Jonathan, thank you for sharing this time and these great insights with us today.
That was great. Thanks for having me, Ken. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And well worthwhile and very timely given all the great work that Eigen is doing. So this has been Jonathan Weiss, Chief Revenue Officer at Eigen Innovation. Thank you for listening. And please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. We wish you a momentous day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.